Golf Smarter, number 404, published on October 1, 2013, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And stay tuned, because nominations are now open for the 9th Annual People's Choice Podcast Awards. And by the new and improved GolfSmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Golf's not about who hits it the best. It's about who misses it the least, with Jeff Ritter.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter, Jeff.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you. One of my favorites. You know that.
I do know that. because you tell me all the time, but I definitely... appreciate it. I know this particular show is a milestone for you, and I really, every time I look in my inbox and your name is there and you're inviting me on the show, it's never a hesitation as to whether or not I want to do it. Absolutely all the time. I really enjoy it, and thanks for having me again.
Well, it's not just me, buddy. The audience always provides great feedback whenever you're on the show. Your integrated approach to coaching is so good, and it's so relevant to the average golfer, and I think that's why we love having you on the show, because of your relevancy.
Well, thank you very much. I'm trying my best to do something that I'm passionate about, but that other people really latch on to and want to get behind. So, you know, you're following things that you love, and I'm doing the same. And when people join along and they kind of get your message, that's what kind of makes the world go around and gets you excited about getting up and doing what you do.
Absolutely. So last time you were on the show, you talked about, we were just before the new year going into 2013, and you were talking about your Make the Turn challenge that you were going to launch on January of 2013. Give us an update of what's going on with that.
Well, as you know, big projects, they always take a lot longer than what you think they will.
Yeah, I know.
So the Make the Turn initiative, it's been my sole focus. I've been transitioning my brand slowly from Jeff Ritter Golf to Make the Turn, which is much more of an organizational feel. I've surrounded myself with a number of performance partners in the areas of golf performance, mindset, fitness, and nutrition. We're really trying to build something that gives golfers the ideas, inspiration, tools, and support to really create exciting, positive change, you know, both on and off the golf course. And last year, I met with Golf Digest magazine, and I shared the vision with them, and I pitched them on the idea of having a weekly challenge series, and they loved it. And ever since, we've been developing the project together. Next week, I'm heading up to Flagstaff, Arizona, and we're going to film anywhere from 45 to 52 segments.
Wow.
At some point, yeah, it's a bold project, right? Big project. You know, thinking about it right now, I wish that when I threw out the number, somebody would have tackled me and said, "What is he thinking?" But you got to go big, right? It's not exciting unless it's a little bit scary at times. But
yeah, go big or go home, right?
Exactly. So we're going to go up there, and at some point in 2014, you'll be seeing these videos populating on GolfDigest.com. Don't really have all the specifics as to how it's going to look and what the feel is going to be, because we're still in development with Golf Digest on that. But it's an exciting thing, and to be able to have the Golf Digest audience, you know, get behind, you know, what I'm trying to produce is really exciting. I think it's going to be a big boost for the program.
So let's give an example. When we first talked about Make the Turn, and that noise in the background is the lawnmower of... They're mowing the lawn out in the golf course. So when we first talked about the Make the Turns challenge, it was daily or weekly tips that were not necessarily just golf tips. They were from fitness to nutrition and beyond to the mental game and swing mechanics. Give us a couple of examples of things that you've done over that time, some of the great tips that you've provided.
Well, I mean, in terms of the golf performance challenges, you know, one of my favorites, and this is one that I kind of latched onto when I was pretty young. My dad was a club pro, and every Christmas Eve, the members at the club would get together, and they would play a two-club tournament. You know, so they would all, you know, grab some hot chocolate. They'd go to the first tee. They'd be, you know, wearing all their snow gear because this is up in Pennsylvania. And they would just take any two clubs, and they would go play nine holes, and then go back to the 19th hole and enjoy a couple of cocktails. So one of the things I do with my junior golf camps to help the kids get more inspired as to creative shot making is they grab two clubs, and we tell the story of Seve Ballesteros learning how to play golf on the beaches of Spain with, you know, only one golf club, which was a three iron. And instead of hitting shots, which are traditional golf shots, they go out and they learn how to be creative. They learn how to hit bunker shots with a five iron. They learn how to hit little pitch and run shots that would be very, you know, British Open or linksy. They learn how to actually putt with these clubs. So one of the challenges would be to take your foursome of golfers that you normally play with every Saturday, and instead of just teeing it up on one and going to 18, you know, making a decision to play the whole way around with just two clubs. And I felt like at the end of the year, you would learn a lot about, you know, what it takes to hit different shots in terms of ball position and shaft position and how you change your weight and how you start to, you know, get creative with your imagery. And also at the end of the year, you might look back on that and say, not only did I learn a lot, but I really remember that day as being separate and different and special, more so than all the other days that we played together and did a normal thing.
Phenomenal idea. I recently was up in Bandon Dunes, and we had my caddy on the show a couple weeks back, and he talked about when he plays over at Bandon and it's links style golf with a lot of wind, he'll take 30 to 35 shots with just his two iron.
Yeah, and one of the crazy things is that in the years that I've done this challenge with people, sometimes we'll do it for five holes, and sometimes I'll just tell them, you know, I want them to pick two clubs and go play nine holes and let me know how you do. They'll call me on the phone and say, I can't believe it, but I actually shot five or six shots lower with two clubs versus having all 14. And I think that with golf, especially golfers that aren't, you know, super avid with the game, they've got too many decisions to make. You know what I mean? It's like you get up there and you're 50 yards away, and it's like, you know, what club should I use? Should I hit a low with a pitching wedge? Do I want to hit it high with a lob wedge? You know, should I, you know, do something that I saw Ernie Els do on TV where the ball checks and spins? And, you know, they end up, you know, walking into these shots without having a clear intention and having some degree of doubt as to whether or not they're going to get what they're looking for.
Right.
And when you take your number of implements and you limit them, you become more creative and you play more instinctive. And of course, one of these clubs is probably not going to be your driver, right? So if you're hitting a five iron or a six iron off the tee, you know, you're not going to be as inclined to hit it sideways or out of balance or lose a golf ball. So when someone plays around the course, of course, I'm not encouraging them to play two clubs from the tips at 7,200 yards or something like that. But when they go ahead and play, you know, they find their tee shot, they advance the ball safely down the fairway, they chip or pitch it onto the green, they putt the ball in the hole, right? And they add them all up and they said, hey, that wasn't too bad. Why can't I do this with all my clubs?
Right. It's interesting because you even talked about, oh, should I try this shot that Ernie Els did last week? Shouldn't the question be, should I? Well, there's two questions that come to my mind. One is, how did he do that? And two, shouldn't I have practiced this before I get to the golf course and figure out that I need this right now?
Yeah, that is a challenge. And I think that, you know, most people, they don't have, obviously, the time that an accomplished player does to practice and work through shots in a training environment before they go out trying on the golf course. And, you know, I understand as a coach that when someone goes to play golf, you know, if they're really into the play mentality, I'm not talking about scoring mentality, but the play mentality, which is the have fun mentality, they might try some things that might have, you know, no positive effect whatsoever on what they might shoot. You know, I mean, they might go for a par five over the water on the second shot where they really shouldn't if they care about their score. And they might try and, you know, hit a shot where the ball checks and spins where they really shouldn't because they never practice it. And I understand that. And I'm okay with that. As long as they're okay with the fact that it might not have a positive effect on their bottom line number. Because the whole point of golf is to have fun, right? It's to recreate, to be social with your friends, and to go back to the office and say, you know, I know I shouldn't have done it, but I tried to take my driver over those trees on the fifth hole, and for the first time in my life, I pulled it off, and it felt great. And what's wrong with that? I mean, so from a coaching perspective, sometimes we get a little bit too stern, and we say, oh, you know, you got to play conservative and pitch the ball out, and those are all score-based goals. But sometimes a score-based goal and a fun-based goal or an experiential-based goal are entirely different. So as a coach, I support both of those things. As long as the student in their mind or the player in their mind is okay if they don't pull it off, I went for it. You know, when you make the turn, it's all about going for it in all of these things. And unless you push yourself and go for it, you're not going to know what you're capable of. So I support those things as long as the player understands that, you know, if they're gunning for their personal best in terms of score, it might not happen today.
Right. Have you ever played golf barefoot?
Oh, yeah, I have a lot as a kid. I don't anymore because my nutritionist, wellness expert wife explains that there's a lot of chemicals on the ground that you shouldn't be putting your bare feet on, especially for a long duration of chipping or putting. But I used to love doing it as a junior golfer. And actually, one of our challenges is a barefooted challenge. And the idea is to learn how to get more connected with the ground, to create an awareness of balance as it relates to your feet, and learning how to use the turf properly without feeling like you're supported by a pair of shoes that's designed to keep your weight in a certain position and make your feet move in a certain way. And I was kind of inspired by this actually through a skiing lesson that I had.
Barefoot?
But a skiing lesson I had a long time ago. You know, as I mentioned in the past, my dad's a club professional, and one of his assistant pros was actually a ski coach on the U.S. men's Olympic ski team, the one that had Phil and Steve Mayer, those great skiers of the past.
Wow.
And I had this great desire to be an amazing skier. When you were in high school, when I was in high school, you know, I thought girls like guys that could ski really well, rip down the mountain. You know? So my whole dream back then was to you know, spend my winters as a ski instructor in Vail, and then spend my summers coaching golf somewhere else. You know, and go back and forth. Well, anyway, I wasn't a very good skier at the time, so this gentleman who was this Olympic coach took me out skiing, and I had these boots that were front entry. You know, boots that had front entry and rear entry. I don't know if you do any skiing, but the front entry boots, you know, they would support you from the front. And what he had me do was get to the top of the mountain and entirely unbuckle my ski boots. Anyone who's ever tried to ski with their boots unbuckled realizes that it's extremely difficult. And I started off sort of floundering down the mountain and falling. I think at one point my foot actually came out of the boot. But very quickly, I developed this great awareness of how to use my feet and use my weight without the support of the boot. And I started improving as a skier. You know, I was doing, you know, wide carving turns. I was doing shorter turns. And honestly, Fred, this is the only ski lesson I've ever had. And ever since then, you know, I hold on to that same tip, and I've become a pretty proficient skier. And that was my make the turn moment as it relates to skiing. So I think that in coaching, you know, people don't know how good they can really be until, number one, they have a good lesson which communicates effectively, and then they can latch onto a tool that's unique to them to help them really, you know, make the turn or get over the hump or see what their true potential is. And for me, that one skiing lesson totally changed my life as it relates to my enjoyment of skiing, how much I got connected with that sport, you know, years ago. And I feel that in golf, people can have that same experience. You know, people come to me all the time and they say, well, how long is it going to take, you know, for me to improve? You know, is it one lesson? Is it four lessons? Is it a 10 lesson package? Am I going to come out here for 6 months? You know, my expectation is that you're going to improve, and you're going to improve within the first 5 minutes. You're going to see something unique and different, and you're going to feel something you never felt before, and you're going to get excited about playing the game. And we've talked about this before. And the thing is that it all comes down to coaching and communication and helping people understand those tools that are unique to them to unlock what their true potential is. And it doesn't mean that you're going to become a great player all of a sudden. So that takes patience, will, and discipline. But this whole Make the Turn initiative is all about, through coaching, helping people see how good they can really be right now, feel that moment of greatness right now, and then from there get them excited about the process of learning now and, of course, into the future.
Well, that's going to lead us into the primary reason that I contacted you. I received an email from a longtime listener who wrote, is it a poem? Is it just a rant? I'm not sure what I want to call this, but I found it to be brilliant. I found it to be profound, and you were the first person I thought of, especially because of your Make the Turn challenge. And I'm going to toss it out to you. But before we do that, of course, I want to break for our sponsor today, and that would be Audible.com. This episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide the Golf Smarter listeners with an opportunity to try Audible for free. That's it. Get a free audiobook of your choice from their enormous library when you sign up for a new account. And one audiobook that you may want to consider, and I'm just going to go ahead and steal this one, Jeff. It's Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. What? Yes, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls by David Sedaris. Very funny writer, very funny man. And he's a regular on This American Life, if you listen to that podcast or that NPR radio show. One of the greatest radio shows ever produced. But it's a great book. A lot of the stuff that he's done on This American Life comes out of this book, and there's even more worth checking out. But you don't have to check that one out. It's 6.5 hours long. David Sedaris not only wrote it, he narrates it. But you can choose from any topic, from any of New York Times bestsellers, whether you want to go, like we always say, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, whatever it is. But to get your free audiobook, anyone you choose, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible, sing along with me, AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Jeff, one of the things that you said about Kate not letting you walk barefoot on the golf course, I did it recently and thought it was a lot of fun, but it ended up being a big mistake because I realized after the round when my foot was starting to hurt that on my follow through, I roll over the left side, the outside of my left foot. And when I'm finished with my swing and my belt buckles facing straight down the fairway to my target, I'm really just on the edge of my left foot. And it's almost completely, you know, perpendicular to the ground. And for the last couple of weeks, my foot's been in a lot of pain. Now, I can wear shoes on the golf course and I'm fine. And I wear shoes, but walking barefoot now is very difficult for me. So that sucks.
Fred, related to that. Because I think that that ankle pain is very revealing of possibly having a foot position at address that's really not conducive to proper weight shifting, okay, rotation. So one of the things that we see a lot is people that show up to the lesson tee with their feet very perpendicular to their line of flight. And I don't know if it's because when you take coaching in Little League Baseball, sometimes they have you get your feet really square or you turn your toes in, or if other sports have that mentality, but with golf, it really doesn't translate. So a good recommendation for you the next time you go out, take your setup and flare both of your feet about 20 degrees out on either side. And what you're going to find is that having the right foot flared is going to encourage a little bit freer hip rotation in the backswing, which will help you increase shoulder rotation. And on the downswing, when you flare that front toe out, number one, it's going to feel a lot easier to put pressure solidly on top of your front foot. And then from there, it's going to feel a lot easier to rotate through the hit. So if you go out there and turn those feet out, I guarantee that, shoes or not, you'll take some pressure off that ankle and probably pick up some distance.
Awesome. Thank you. I'd hang up right now because I got the tip that I was hoping for. But I'm not going to let you go because I want to read this letter to you. You ready?
Let's go.
All right. So it's from Stuart Margolis, and he's been listening to Golf Smarter for a long time, and he updates me on what's going on occasionally, but here's the letter that he wrote to me. Just wanted to say, no matter what I've tried over the last 10 years has not resulted in lowering my handicap. On average, I still shoot 90, no matter what. I drive the ball around 200 to 225 yards, no matter what. I still have 1, 2, 3 disastrous holes every time I play. I'm lucky to average 1 birdie every 3 rounds, no matter what. I'm the same golfer now as I was when I was 17 years old. Everything works for a time or two or three, then back to nothing works. A vicious cycle of doing the same things over and over and over, always thinking that the next time I learn will fix my game for good. I just realized the other day that when I can just golf and let go of thinking I need to improve, and let go of saying that was a stupid shot, and let go of being unconscious, then it's okay. If I can revel and enjoy someone else's good play, that's okay. Why do I have to play well to think I'm okay? Isn't it enough to enjoy someone else? Isn't that a real gift that I can enjoy someone else? Why do I think in order to be happy on the golf course, I have to show improvement? I love that piece. Thank you, Stuart. I think it's amazing.
That's a great letter. It's very honest.
Very revealing, very honest.
So ironically, it's very free of ego, the things that are associated with one's ego and how we generally communicate with people. Because if you have an issue with ego, generally you wouldn't be so forthcoming. And when he poses the question, why do I feel like I have to perform well to have fun? Well, that's entirely ego related. So basically, we're putting our personal value or self-worth somehow into how we hit a golf ball or what kind of score that we shoot, which takes the entire, art of play out of the whole reason we're out there, So the big thing that I try and get across to people that pose this question from the, how am I supposed to have fun doing this, is to look at every day on the golf course or on the practice tee as a gift, a gift to challenge yourself to try and do something that is honestly really, really hard. Golf is hard. Mm-hmm. And good golf, it's not about who hits it the best. It's about really who misses it the least. And if you look at, golf shots as no longer being good or bad, but simply as being facts or results, then you have an opportunity to make an adjustment and try again and try again and try again. And eventually you make contact and you get a result that makes you smile. But if you don't get what you want, you can't let your ego devalue who you are, how good of a player you are, or the experience you have being out there. So I think that that's a really big message is, identify why you're out there to begin with. It's not to go out there and prove to everybody that you can hit, 20 perfect 6-irons on the practice tee. It's to be able to go out there and say, today's, I'm going to try and accomplish this goal. And I realize that some shots I'm going to like and other shots, maybe not so much, but it's all about the experience and the joy of problem solving more so than it is hitting a bunch of great shots and having the person next to me look at me and say, oh, he must be a good player. Maybe I'll talk to him and ask him out for a drink.
So I absolutely love your line. It's not about who hits it the best. It's about who misses it the least. And that's a message that I don't think that we grasp that well.
No, it's not. These are things that we learn at such a young age. Somebody posed on Facebook yesterday. It said, what is your feeling on Tiger Woods and how he might, swear or get upset or throw a club or drop a club or act out when the ball doesn't, do what he wants to do? On a scale of 1 to 10, how much does this bother you? And most people are like, 1 or 2, it doesn't bother me at all. We all do it, so why can't he? It bothers me a lot. And it bothers me because as it relates to kids, kids learn by modeling, right? They learn by watching the behavior of others, and then they model that behavior. So when the world's best player doesn't get what he wants and he gets upset, and a kid sees that, then you know, they go out and they say, well, you know, Tiger Woods hit a bad shot, so he slammed his club, and I hit a shot that I didn't like, so I should slam my club. And if I slam my club, then people will know that I expect more out of myself than what I just did. And if I let them know that, then my ego is safe. Whereas if I hit a shot and I top it or hit it out of bounds and I act calm, cool, and collected, they're going to make the assumption that that's who I am and that's what I do. And my ego is not going to like that because my ego wants, you know, that gratification from knowing that people think highly of me. You know, so I think it's a really big problem. So any golfer that's an adult, you know, they've been a victim of modeling for years and years and years and years. And our conditioning now is much greater than it is for the 9, 10, or 11-year-old that, you know, might come out to one of my golf camps. You know, so the idea is to realize that it's not your fault, but through a shift in mindset, you can change the way you look at the game. And the moment you do that, you're going to have a lot more fun with the game and you're going to be a lot more okay with yourself.
And so let's go back to, and that's why I really wanted to talk to you about this, because I wanted to see where you would go with it. And you focused on that second stanza. I would like to go back because I related so well to the first part when he talked about no matter what he did, it's not resulted in any change in his handicap. Now, I know for myself, when I started doing this podcast, I was probably 18, 19. I didn't even have an index at that point, but I was not hitting much below the mid 90s on a regular basis. It was a big deal if I got to the low 90s. So, and over the years, I've improved my mental game. I've gotten a real good grasp of what strategy and course management is, and it's helped me a lot. I've totally worked on my short game and focused on up and down, up and down. Today, it's going to be all about up and downs, just getting my, if I don't reach the green in regulation, that's fine, but let me chip up next to so I only one putt. You know, like, all these things have really helped my game, and yet I've broken 80 three times, and it's been 5 years since I've done it the last time. And I've gotten to 80. I've gotten 81. The other day I shot an 82. I get down there, but I don't just cross that barrier, nor do I look at the scorecard. So I'm fascinated by hearing him say, on average, I still shoot 90, no matter what. I still drive the ball 2 to 225, no matter what. I still have 1, 2, 3 disastrous holes every time I play. One birdie every three rounds. It sounds like he's talking about my game. How do we get from there to the next level?
Yeah, well, with golf, I mean, the one thing about golf is that there's more information available on how to play golf, you know, for the public than any other sport. I mean, you got the Golf Channel, you got all these different magazines, you got YouTube and blogs and shows like this. I mean, so golfers are very much at risk of not having a good round and then perhaps seeking some advice and trying something on their own. And then maybe having something seem like it works, and then all of a sudden it doesn't work, and then all of a sudden you go look for something else, you know, and then it works, and it doesn't work. And you kind of go around, and at no point in time did you really establish, you know, truly what your contact pattern is, what your contact behavior is. And then from that, you didn't really identify what your blueprint for success would be. And then once the blueprint for success was created, you didn't create the mindset for sustainability, you know, behind that blueprint. So it's really important. And with Make the Turn, I mean, there's a system of coaching. And the system is to, number one, identify your pattern. You know, everyone has an impact pattern. You know, either the ball curves to the right too much or curves to the left too much. It goes higher than it should or lower than it should. You hit the ground too early, too late, or not at all. The ball hits the toe, the center of the heel. So a lot of people really don't know exactly what that basic impact pattern is. And they need to realize that that pattern exists through every shot, you know, the putter through the driver. And sometimes that pattern is conducive to hitting reasonable shots. And other times it's conducive to hitting terrible shots. But when people come out to the coaching tee, you know, the education starts off with, you know, who are you now? You know, so that's what people need to do at home. They need to say, who am I now as a ball striker? And once they identify the pattern, then what they have to do is they have to learn how to strengthen their pillar. So with Make the Turn, we've got four pillars of performance. We've got golf performance, which is, you know, impact-related performance. We have mindset pillars, we have fitness pillars, and we also have nutritional pillars. But as it relates to golf performance or ball striking, you have to understand some of the characteristics or fundamentals associated with hitting the ground in the right spot, hitting the center of the face, starting a ball online and keeping a ball online. You know, so when you come out to one of our programs, and there's a definite educational curve that people have to go through so that, number one, they understand where they are now, right? Identifying your pattern. Then number two, they strengthen their pillar, which is really an understanding of the fundamentals associated with quality impact. Once they do that, Fred, now we go and we make our shift into our preferences. You know, and the preference is the impact and or ball flight unique to you that's going to make you the happiest. Not everyone wants to hit it the same. Some people want to hit it farther. Some people want more control. Some people like to draw. Some people like to fade it. Because that information, that desire, really influences the game plan that we enact as a coaching team. And once you do that and you start hitting some shots, getting the results you're looking for, and you have that total clarity in that blueprint, now it's all about living the black belt mentality. And the black belt mentality is based on this story. And I think I've told it before on the show, but I'll tell it again.
Please.
Young boy walks into the dojo and he asks his master, "Master, when will I be a black belt?" And the master replies, "You will never be a black belt. For anyone who would ask such a question doesn't have the patience, will, and discipline to do what is required to become a black belt." So the idea is that when you live the black belt mentality, every day you walk into the dojo with an open mind and the desire to become a problem solver, the desire to learn something new from your coach and to diligently pursue that practice with all your heart. And a lot of people don't understand this, but you know, in Western culture, we have a belt system associated with martial arts. You know, you go white, then yellow, orange, brown, black. You know, I don't know the exact order, but everyone knows there's a belt system. Well, originally in the world of martial arts, there was no belt system. And you started off with a white belt because it held your outfit on there. And after years and years of training, the belt turned black because it was soiled and dirty from all of your hard work. And then the true black belt always has the goal to turn their black belt back to white. And the way you turn it back to white is to keep training and working and striving until the fibers tear and fray and the white cloth is once again revealed.
It's not bleach?
Back in the day, it wasn't. So an important thing, you know, because when people come out to me and they say, "How long should it take for me to improve?" I feel like you should improve immediately. You should hit a shot within the first 5 minutes that's way different than you've ever hit before, and you should get excited about it. The only way you're going to be able to sustain that, you know, and not become frustrated or turned off by the game or start chasing all these other ideas that may or not be helpful to you is if you really embrace this idea of the black belt mentality. You know, you got that blueprint, but now it's all about patience, will, and discipline. And if you follow that formula, know about your pattern, strengthen your pillar, and then, of course, decide what preference you want in terms of ball flight, live that black belt mentality, I guarantee you, you'll go out there every day, have more fun with the game, hit more consistent golf shots, and not end up like a lot of golfers do.
Jeff, you're phenomenal. I just love talking to you about golf. I love talking to you off the show too, but when it comes to this stuff, man, you just step right up to the plate with bases loaded and you're just the man we want to have the bat in hand. It's incredible.
Thank you.
And again, that your four pillars of Make the Turn is so much of what I believe I'm trying to do with Golf Smarter for the golf community is golf, mindset, fitness, nutrition. How do we educate people on those things to give them the full breadth of how to be a better player all the way around? It's not just about hitting the ball well.
One thing I would like to mention is the fact that, you know, this Make the Turn initiative, you know, the launch is sort of with the Golf Digest project. Simultaneous with that, there'll be a new Make the Turn website. Will there be a lot of information about the unique programs we have to offer, online coaching opportunities, membership portals. It's really about, you know, this high performance, sustainable lifestyle movement, you know, using golf as a vehicle to be our best, both on and off the course. So it's my life's mission. I've got so many great people around me in terms of my performance team supporting the effort, and of course our media partners. So I'm excited for the viewers to follow up with it and come early 2014, you know, see the whole launch and hop on board and enjoy the experience with us.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Best of luck, and my best to Kate, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Fred. Thank you.
Hey, it's that time of year again. The 9th annual People's Choice Podcast Awards are open for nominations. In the history of these awards, Golf Smarter is the only golf podcast to make the finals in any category. And it's been quite an honor to make the top 10 list in 2008, 2010, and 2012. Also in 2008, our other podcast, Golf Smarter Tips, made it to the top 10 in two categories, sports and best produced. But before the voting begins for this year's awards, you need to nominate what is hopefully your favorite golf podcast, Golf Smarter. The nomination process, which is open for only 2 weeks, closing at 11:59 p.m. on October 15th, 2013, is at podcastawards.com. I'll post their link on our blog. You can nominate us one time only. If you try to do it multiple times, it'll cancel your other nominations. So even though your intentions are admirable, don't do that. Once the voting begins in November, then you can vote once per day. So please go to podcastawards.com, nominate Golf Smarter, and to make sure that we're all on the same page, Golf Smarter is two words, and nominate it in both the sports category and the best produced categories. They'll also want to know our URL, which is golfsmarter.com. So again, nominate the podcast Golf Smarter with the URL golfsmarter.com for best produced and sports podcast. As always, thank you so much for your continued support. Remember our conversation with Nick Manzano from episodes 394 and 395? He's the custom club fitter at the Golf Mart. Well, I went back a second time to meet with Nick, and this time to get fitted for a new driver, 3-wood, and some hybrids. Put your money where your mouth is, Fred. I always talk about fitting. Okay, I went ahead and did it. So next up, for members only, you'll get to eavesdrop on the entire fitting session. Plus, I'll also produce and publish a video of that entire fitting. So please don't miss a single episode. Help keep this listener-supported podcast alive by joining Golf Smarter for members only today at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.